The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rantz, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rantz, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
Republicans are trying to make crime illegal again. One Republican is pushing a bill that would prevent transgender female inmates, or biological men, from going into women's prisons. Plus, Joy Reid claims the Tyree Nichols death is, quote, as American as apple pie. What is her intent? I'll take you through it this hour of the Jason Rantz Show on those stories and so much more. So, let's get into it.
The monologue.
The Seattle Police Department, SPD, they have identified the officer who struck a woman in a crosswalk last week while he was driving to an overdose call. She later died of her injuries. Now, we haven't really talked about this story on the show at all, despite, I know, a lot of local media interest in this. I think the local media is interested in this because this is a cop that they might be able to smear. And as of now, there is no evidence whatsoever that he did anything knowingly wrong, that this was nothing more than an unfortunate accident. This is a guy who, again, according this time to Chief Adrian Diaz, he had his lights on and the siren.
He did have his emergency lights on and was clearing intersections with his siren. As is protocol, a drug recognition expert responded to the collision scene and found no evidence of impairment in the officer.
So it sounds like it was a mistake. And I don't know if it was his mistake versus the pedestrian's mistake. It doesn't matter in the sense that it's still a tragedy. Someone died. But it does matter when it comes to whether or not we're going to identify this cop. Now, he's been identified because they have to identify him. Media chooses to identify him. They're choosing to identify him. I'm choosing not to. Because unless you're telling me that he actually did something wrong, the only reason to identify him is to shame him. And something tells me he's already dealing with some pretty traumatic feelings right now. Because he didn't show up to work thinking he was going to accidentally run into someone and have them die from their wounds. Now, the victim has been named as 23-year-old Janavi Kandula, who was a student over at Northeastern University's SLU campus, South Lake Union campus. She died as a result of an accident. That's it. This cop is getting doxxed online. He's getting attacked and smeared. There's no reason to name him. But some are choosing to. Now, we know that the investigation, once complete, will be given to the prosecuting attorney's office. They'll decide whether or not charges are warranted. And that's only, of course, if they find that this guy broke any laws. This is a little bit different than an investigation into use of force. For this, it's a collision investigation. And part of the reason why is that there are some significant differences in necessary expertise when looking at a traffic collision. Physics are involved. Speed is involved. And the folks who look into use of force, like with your weapon, that requires a different skill set here. So we're at a point where they're in the middle of their investigation and this cop is getting smeared. That's wrong. I'm not shocked. I'm certainly not shocked that the activist community is doing it online. I'm a little disappointed that media outlets are doing it. It's funny because they generally, media outlets, won't name, for example, teachers who are accused of doing some pretty shady stuff. Because they haven't been charged with a crime, they haven't been fired, whatever it is. I have a general rule of naming people who do things that I think are wrong. And I use good faith judgment in that. Thus, I usually name teachers. The reason why we cover them is because they're doing something that's wrong. We name principals. We sometimes name cops who do things that are wrong. But there's no evidence that has been presented at this point suggesting this cop did anything wrong, that this was nothing more than a tragic accident. And until that changes, if it changes, I'll change my tune. But right now, if you've got sirens on, your lights on, and this happens, it seems to me that we shouldn't be charging this guy, and we shouldn't be going after him the way that they're going after him. Now this.
The interview.
Well, Republicans would like to make drugs illegal again. Democrats, however, are standing in the way. There's one bill that would fix the Blake decision, which legalized, I know they call it decriminalized, but it legalized personal possession of drugs. Joining me on the line is the sponsor of the bill, State Representative Jacqueline Maycumber from Republic. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So this bill is actually very simple. It's not, no offense, it's not innovative. You are changing one word.
I am. A word and a half. So adding knowingly, which was already in the RCW, which says if you're in the possession of drugs, you knowingly have them on your person. So if you're shooting up in front of a school, heroin, you probably knowingly know that you have drugs and you should have an intervention with the criminal justice system. And then makes the possession of those drugs, which we fentanyl, methamphetamines, heroin, a gross misdemeanor.
Where does this bill stand? I know that there are two supposedly bipartisan bills that they say address this issue.
Well, it hasn't received a hearing, and I have grave concerns with communication with the other side that we are going to have a what they call a decriminalized non-justice intervention, which means they will try to build a framework of government to assist these people. But this is the judicial system is in place right now. It's hundreds of years in place. It's done a good job for intervening people who are in crisis mode, and that's an addiction, and stopping the cycle of addiction and bringing them in. And you can take them to drug courts, therapeutic courts, whatever is necessary at that point. But to completely circumvent the judicial system because they don't find it fair is wrong.
Isn't that what they're doing across the board? We talked earlier this show about a ban on pretty much most traffic stops by police. They're attempting to abolish the police without officially abolishing the police.
Absolutely. That's the greatest concern, to say, well, the judicial system's not fair. So instead of fixing it, let's go ahead and circumvent it and give criminals greater rights than the victims. And that's wrong. I mean, you can look at all the policies, including the policy to give those in custody who've created have heinous crimes, including rape of children and murder, minimum wage while they're incarcerated. That's a bill that is having a hearing and moving further, by the way, than the Blake fix bill.
Yeah.
And, some of these people who've created these heinous crimes are looking to make minimum wage while they're incarcerated, and yet the victims may never work again.
Yeah. Congratulations, Democrats. You're fighting for a rapist to get minimum wage while releasing rapists at the same time. Actually, this actually is quite on brand for them. What's going on in Tenino and what's going on across the state, we're releasing folks from McNeil Island to less restrictive alternatives. Many times, most times, the community has no clue what's happening. It is. Do you view this as a part of a plan to depopulate prisons?
Well, I just signed a policy and the number hasn't dropped yet. It is a individual from another district's bill, but it says that you have to notify the community in so many different ways that the individuals will be integrated into our communities. And these are violent sex offenders from McNeil Island. We're supposed to be sharing this populace. And these are areas without a strong sense of law enforcement, rural areas mm-hmm. with a little services. And so, your kid rides the bike to school. We don't know if they're safe or not. This is shocking proposals. And at the same time saying, we're not going to pass a pursuit bill.
Yeah, no kidding. But I want to go back to this idea of less restrictive alternatives, which is basically the strategy that they're using to depopulate these prisons. I went back and I watched the debate when this was coming up a couple years ago, and Democrats promised the whole process would be transparent and communities would be told. So they're just going back on their word.
It's shocking when you see that you're absolutely right. These populace being placed everywhere across Washington state, and our community is not aware. Our families are less safe. I mean, we could go on and talk about the statistics of crime in the last 2 years. And now we don't know where it's coming from. I mean, it's frightening what our communities are putting up with, our families and our children. They're living a completely different world in the last 24 months than they were previously. This is shocking, and it's not fair for them.
Is the truth that we're going to have to wait and see the crime crisis get even worse before anything happens? Because Republicans have zero power right now. You have zero power. And you know most of these bills that you're coming up with or your colleagues are coming up with will completely be ignored.
Well, and I have to have hope. I have to have hope in the legislative process. And I have to have hope that people will come out, go to the website, testify on these bills, go on the record. We need to show them. And truthfully, there's people on the other side who understand this is a big problem, that the criminal system is a big problem, that they're not getting the arrests, that people are eluding officers, there's no pursuits. I mean, you can watch it every day you go to the store. We are now in a society that is only getting worse for the safety of our families. So I do believe there's other people that understand that their communities are less safe than their legislators here. It's just making sure that they want to make the difference and stand up.
Well, that's a big piece of this. Stand up. Be heard. It's not that difficult to pick up the phone or send an email. We've been talking with State Representative Jacqueline Maycumber of Republic. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Now this.
The monologue.
There are two lawmakers right now in D.C., one on the House side, one on the Senate side, both Democrats, who are not even shying away from their support of censorship. Adam Schiff, the disgraced congressman from California, and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island. They, this week, are demanding answers from Facebook about why they decided to reinstate President Donald Trump's account, not just on Facebook, but also on Instagram. And they say that it's an inexplicable move. So we got this word last week. We brought it to you last week, that the president's suspension across the platforms from Meta, the parent company, has been rescinded, or at least it was supposed to end when it did last week. It was supposed to only last for 3 years or 2.5 years, whatever the number was. And we haven't actually seen anything yet posted from Donald Trump, who's still using Truth Social, which is the company that he has ownership stake in. But we learned this week that Schiff and Whitehouse and undoubtedly other Democrats are apoplectic about this. They think that this is wrong. Now, of course, they don't think about the First Amendment implications of sending a letter to Meta demanding that they explain why they're allowing a former president and current presidential candidate from going back on their platform. They seem to be okay with the censorship. And yes, it would be censorship if it is the government putting pressure on Facebook to ban the president again. So they wrote in their letter to Nick Clegg, he's the president of global affairs over at Meta, and he's the one who posted the original note saying that the Trump suspension was being lifted. They write, based on Meta's previous statements on standards for allowing Trump back on the platform, his account should not have been reinstated. They say that Trump has, quote, continued to post harmful election content on Truth Social that would likely violate Facebook's policies. And we have every reason to believe he will bring similar conspiratorial rhetoric back to Facebook, too. So what he's saying here is obviously subjective, but let's just say it was 100% fact. They're arguing, and they know that this is illegal, they're arguing that a company, by force of government, should ban someone based on speech he hasn't yet made. That's what they're asking for. Prior restraint. And we know that the government can't do that when it comes to journalism, for example, reports. They can't stop me from writing something that they think will be illegal in some way or offensive in some way. There's a very limited scope as to whether or not I have like state secrets that I shouldn't have access to that the government has a stake in and could maybe prevent it from being published. But what we're talking about here is obviously not that. They're saying that he's going to violate, the former president going to violate Facebook terms of service. And maybe he would. Maybe he would. But you're not supposed to, especially from the government perspective, tell a company that because you think someone's going to do something that he hasn't yet done, they should go ahead and censor his speech. This is absurd. And it's transparent. They don't want to see Trump anywhere because they realize that his message can resonate with voters. And they still see him as a threat. I don't think he's the threat that he once was. I think Ron DeSantis is a bigger threat to the Democrat Party. And no doubt we've seen the silly attacks on him. And that's going to continue. But they still see Trump as a threat. And they're right to see him as a little bit of a threat, no doubt, especially if he goes up against Joe Biden again for president. And so they're trying to stop him from having a voice, because the larger his voice, the more voters hear it or read it or see it, and the more likely they might be to vote for him. Now, I also think the opposite is true, but Schiff and White House don't seem to care. They are obsessed with Trump, particularly Adam Schiff. Obsessed with Trump. They wrote in their letter how Facebook could reinstate his account given all the additional content on Truth Social that would likely have resulted in a brand new suspension if it were on your platform is inexplicable. Well, that's not exactly how it works. Some folks know what the rule. If you have different rules on different platforms, you're going to expect different content. Now, again, whether or not Trump violates the Facebook rules, and he would be silly to knowingly violate the rules on Facebook, given that it is a major platform to get content out there. But if you're setting aside what the rules are on Facebook versus what the rules are on Truth Social, of course you're going to get a little bit of different content. So if you're allowed to, you know, post questions about the vaccine, which folks on the left don't want you to post, you're going to do that on Truth Social. If you're not allowed to do that on Facebook or YouTube or Instagram, wherever, then you probably won't, unless you're looking to get suspended. Now, of course, on top of that, the letter also added that they wanted to get a briefing on what Meta is doing to, quote, uphold election integrity and not allow their platform to be used to spread conspiracy theories and election lies. Oh, okay. What they really mean is so that no one questions anything about an election. By the way, under this policy, the way that Schiff and White House want it to be interpreted, my story yesterday that I posted at KTTH.com would not be allowed to be posted, and I would get kicked off of Facebook. Because in yesterday's blog post, again, it's at KTTH.com, I talk about how Democrats are trying to get rid of the one election security measure, the signature verification. They want to get rid of it, claiming that it's racist, because everything is racist. But under how Schiff and White House interpret election misinformation or lies or conspiracy theories, my content would be banned. So actually, that should give you a reminder. Go check it out before it actually does get banned. Go to ktth.com or head on over to my Facebook page, Twitter page. I've got it all posted. Just to make it easier, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to my piece. Now this.
The interview.
So in a curious remark, the U.S. Surgeon General says children should stay off social media until at least they're 13 years old. Some of us think adults should probably also do the same. Joining me on the line is a Turning Point USA contributor, Morgan McMichael. Morgan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jason. It's such a good time.
So on the one hand, I can see why they're saying it. On the other hand, I can poke holes in it because they seem to be on the left okay with kids changing their gender at like 12 years old or earlier. So what do you make of this?
I mean, I think it's honestly a brilliant idea, because if you look at my generation, Gen Z, we were the generation that grew up and was raised on social media. I mean, from the age that I was 13, I've had a cell phone, I've been on all the social media apps, and we've even seen lawsuits against Instagram and Meta of the harmful effects with mental health and how even young girls see their body image because of social media. And I think it's really toxic. But I also think, on the other hand, it's kind of funny, because the left is so good at using social media as a weapon and using the lack of censorship on their side to promote their agenda. I mean, we see TikTok is totally toxic, and especially when it comes to political views. So I think, you know, social media should be limited for kids. Mm-hmm. I don't think it should be as normalized. I mean, now we see iPad kids at 5 years old sitting at the dinner table. All they're doing is watching YouTube. So I think we really need to just monitor kids better with social media. And then also, I mean, adults too. I know a lot of people that do social media breaks. So I don't know. I think we need to limit it.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, this is just another reminder for parents to get involved. Obviously, that no one's suggesting a law that would bar kids from joining, you know, Instagram and whatnot. But how do you, and you know this as someone who is younger you grew up with the internet and you grew up with these apps, it's not always easy to tell a kid to chill out with their social media. And, you know, the same should be probably said to some 16 or 17 year old of like, you know, get offline, stop spending so much time there. How should parents, I guess, message this to kids?
I mean, it's definitely up to the parents. And I think, honestly, the companies are a bit liable, especially when it comes to the content that they're showing different age groups. I mean, there's pornographic material all over Twitter that's not censored. Same with Instagram. I mean, I've even seen high schoolers and middle schoolers, when they pull up their Explore page on Instagram, they just see things that they probably shouldn't be seeing. So I think it just comes to the parents monitoring. I know it's going to be hard when you have all your friends and you have your schoolmates all have the same apps. And so I feel like, honestly, the liability also comes down to the tech companies needing to filter what is seen to different age groups, but then in addition, just parents monitoring what their kids are seeing.
Is there an aspect to this conversation in which folks go a little bit overboard in calling out social media?
I think so, because also, I mean, we have free will in America, so we can do whatever we want on these platforms. But I do think, you know, it could be overboard, because especially look at censorship. We see the right is censored all the time. And I think something like this kind of goes in that realm, because if they could, you know, say that content under 13 that's more on the right is not suitable for children, and yet things on the leftist ideologies might be, quote, suitable for children up to their standards. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out.
And finally, do you think that this is political in a sense, in that are there more young liberal teens doing this versus conservatives, or is it just across the board? It is just an issue that's facing young people.
I think it's a little bit of both, because, I mean, if you look at TikTok specifically and how gender ideology has been pushed, the transgender movement on social media, it has specifically been targeted to young teens, especially middle schoolers who are looking for hormone replacements, looking for transitioning. And so we've just really seen the attack on our youth through social media. And so I think it's just honestly going to be utilized for the left more. So part of me says it's kind of under a guise of, you know, social media is bad, we need to do something about it. But then also, how are we going to continue to utilize it to get to that next generation?
TPOSA contributor Morgan McMichael. Morgan, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rant.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rant, is on that.
And you keep on bringing us these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
So we've got a situation here in Washington State where we've got some transgender folks who are going into prisons that do not correspond with their biological gender. And of course, that poses some significant issues. Not just safety issues for the inmate, but safety issues for the people who are currently in jail. What about them? Joining me on the line is someone who hopes to do something about it, State Representative Cindy Jacobson from Puyallup. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me. I would like to shed some light on this. And I'll just say right from the outset, I've got some people outside marching around in a circle saying some not very nice things about Governor Inslee. And so if you hear that, then that is what's happening. So
at least they're on our side, even if they might be a little bit mean-spirited. So take me through.
Well, they need to be nice, though.
Yes, 100%. Be civil, folks. Take us through what your legislation aims to do.
Well, okay, so this is a very simple bill, and I can tell you the background is that I had heard a Dorian Monson show in 2021 talking about how there had allegedly been some transgender inmates who were in the gen pop of the women's prisons, and that a woman who was developmentally disabled had been raped and some crimes had occurred. And so I wanted to write a bill, which I did, and the bill was very simple. Go ahead, and if someone's been convicted of a sex offense against women, that they cannot be housed in the general population of women. That's it. That's all the bill says. It doesn't reference anyone transgender or anything. And so Representative Clippert sponsored that bill, and I co-sponsored it last session. And it went exactly nowhere.
Yeah.
And so since then, there's been some requests, some public records requests from the TNT, Tacoma News Tribune, and from Cairo, and from some individuals asking for aggregate data on how many people are in the prison system that, you know, are identifying as a gender that is different than their biological gender. And, you know, and that data was not given out by the Department of Corrections. In fact, Disability Rights Washington asked for an injunction and the data was not released because it would be, by the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment, because transgender folks are subject to more risk of rape. And, you know, that's fair. We need to keep them safe, too. And 14th Amendment, transgender folks are a protected class under the Washington State Constitution, the court said. So all these reasons, they issued an injunction against releasing the aggregate information. And so
that, and you don't even have, as a lawmaker, you don't even have access to that?
No, I don't. And so that was troublesome to me. I did find out from the Department of Corrections, and this is in an email, that they've been having this policy since 2017 of allowing folks to come on into the jail that they matches their gender identity. And it's under certain circumstances, and they're supposed to be doing a review and all these things. So that's been happening since 2017, but I don't have any information on aggregate data. And
do you have any guesses? I mean, we know anecdotally, because I've heard directly from DOC staff, Department of Corrections staff, telling me that this is happening. I don't know how many times it's happening. And that is an important part of this conversation. It, to me at least, I read them not wanting to give this information out as indicating that it's happening more often than we think. And the concern is, I know it's a concern of yours and so many other people, is that folks who aren't even truly transgender will lie so men can be put in the cell with women.
Yeah, that's a concern. And you do wonder why they're not releasing the aggregate data. And to me, I wonder why a simple bill like this that just says, if you've been convicted of a sex crime, and it, you know, the bill delineates which ones and they're bad ones, then you don't get to go in the women's general population if you've been convicted of a sex crime against women. And it's
where would they go? So let's say it was a biological woman who committed the crime. Where would she go?
You know, I don't know. And I know that the Federal Prison Rape Elimination Act has provisions in it that do not allow us to house transgender individuals separately. But I think that you could house a person separately who'd been convicted of a sex offense and not in a room with someone else. I mean, I just think we have to keep everyone safe, and that could be part of it.
What has been, and we're talking with Sydney Jacobson, the state representative Republican from Puyallup, what has been the response from your Democrat colleagues? As you know, unless you get Democrats on board, no Republican legislation gets anywhere.
Crickets. I try to talk about it, and people seem, oh, really? That could be a problem, but they don't, you know, there's no one willing to stand up for this. And it kind of,
what do you think that is?
I don't know, because it keeps me up at night when I think about it. And we are responsible. Again, I have five daughters. We're responsible for keeping people safe in prisons, all people, transgender folks, women, everybody. We have to have a system that keeps people safe. That's our job. So it bothers me. And I guess because this is a political hot button issue, but to me, it's not. It's just, okay, let's keep people safe.
Well, at the same time, we know that there is a plan from Democrats due to depopulate prisons. Right. So I think it's, they probably don't want to bring any attention to any issue having to do with the prisons. There's an issue right now in Tenino where, as of tomorrow, there will be a pedophile by the name of Brian Horton living there. This is a guy who's leaving McNeil Island to go to a less restrictive alternative building that does not have adequate security. Do you see more efforts like this underway across the state?
You know, I am just looking at the micro level of this one issue. Mm-hmm. I think that we're responsible again. If we have someone who has proven who they are and they're in a facility on McNeil Island for a reason, for heaven's sakes, let's believe who they are and keep them there.
So you know that this is not going to pass. Is there a... So what's next on this? Obviously, we're talking about it because we want to bring attention to it. But Democrats, for the most part, haven't seemed to be moved, even when they get some bad press, most likely because they kind of feel untouchable. And they're probably right to feel untouchable at this point. They haven't suffered any political consequences for decisions they've made.
Yeah. I mean, well, elections do have consequences.
Yep.
But I, you know, in an upright manner, have to do the best I can to bring to light the issues that I see. And, you know, I would hope that this would get some publicity and we would, you know, make some rules that took care of everybody's safety.
Has the media more generally been interested in this outside of conservative media?
No, not at all. None.
Yeah. What does that tell you about those media outlets?
I just fear that we are so worried about being politically correct that we won't take a hard, logical look at things, because this is not a politically correct issue to bring up. And I don't want anybody to be unsafe. If we have transgender individuals, we need to respect and care for them just as much as anybody else. So, you know, it's not that. It's that this is a safety problem.
It seems pretty obvious. It's a safety issue.
Yeah. But everyone that I talk to, even Democrats in my town, you know, yeah, everybody seems to just say, yeah, oh, gee, that seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, but part of this, the issue is, as you know, if the media is not going to bring attention to it beyond conservative media, it's not going to get the same level of respect. It's not going to get the same spotlight. But the Seattle Times or the Spokesman Review, Tacoma News Tribune, they're not going to cover this. Cairo 7, right, maybe they sent a reporter down. Maybe they'll have a conversation, but King 5 won't. Fox 13 won't. Yeah. That's a problem.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, elections have consequences too. And we are getting the government that we voted in. And I'm one of 40 in the House, and there's 58 on the other side. And I'm going to try to work with all those 58 as best I can to get logical policy passed. But we're in the deep minority.
Yeah.
And so if something is not taken up by the majority party, we certainly have few tools to, you know, get some relief.
Do Republicans at this point have any leverage? In the sense, we talked last week that on the Senate side, the Democrats need 4 Republicans to make abortion a constitutional right, right? So this is, they need the supermajority. There's leverage there. But is there any leverage on the House side on any of these issues?
I think so, because my understanding is that they do not yet have a supermajority, although they're close. And so our bonding capacity, we have to approve what we bond. There's a few things that require a supermajority, but, you know, I think our leverages are just our stick-to-itiveness and mm-hmm. our bringing things to light and trying to make logical arguments and doing the best we can. And that's all I can do.
When it comes to the supermajority issue on whether it's bonding or, you know, whatever it is, why don't the Republicans just play hardball and say, okay, anything that requires a supermajority, we will not do? If you're not going to treat us fairly, if you're not going to treat our constituents fairly, because that's really what this is about, you have a bunch of constituents who aren't truly being represented because all of the Republican ideas are being blocked. They're not even getting a hearing. What's wrong with just saying, okay, anything that requires a supermajority, 100%, we don't care what it is, we're voting no?
Well, and I think you could make an argument for that, and we'll see what happens as we go down the line in the session. I'm a team player, and usually we try very hard to make a vocal opposition, and we do the best we can. So I could be convinced to play hardball if that's what the team was doing.
Yeah, well, let's do it. I kind of think we're at that point. Hopefully you will at least get this bill a hearing. I won't hold my breath, but this is for people who are listening right now. If you're living in an area that is a purple district and you happen to have a Democrat state rep, make sure you're calling and emailing. Be polite, of course, be civil, but make sure that they know you want this bill to be heard. What number is this bill?
It is 1233.
1233. So House Bill 1233. Make sure you're telling your state lawmaker that you expect that they will at least give this a committee hearing. We've been talking with State Representative Cindy Jacobson from Puyallup. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for letting me tilt at windmills. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. The quick hit coming up next.
The Jason Rand Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
There's still a lot of folks who are trying to figure out how best to angle their coverage of Tyre Nichols to make them money, to deliver them not just clicks and eyeballs and ears, but to give them attention so that they might use this for political purposes. Now, the political purposes can be a whole host of things, including but not limited to further restrictions or reforms on policing. We're supposed to pretend that what happened in Memphis is systemic, that it happens all the time. We just maybe haven't seen the video. Now, of course, we know that to be false, that that is just a smear against policing by political activists, bad faith activists, who want to abolish police. We talked a little bit about the latest Democrat bill in the second hour of the show that seeks to abolish police. That is what they're trying to do. De-police to the point where police officers are only responding to murders instead of actually getting in the way before murder actually occurs. It is disgusting. It's not just a smear against cops, but it's a smear against this country, especially the way that Joy Reid on MSNBC put it when she talked about the Tyre Nichols story last night.
What happened to the 29-year-old father, skateboarder, FedEx driver, and amateur photographer should outrage you. It should shock and disgust you, as should the so-called brothers who chose to behave like a little blue gang rather than as black men. But it damn sure shouldn't surprise you. What happened to Tyre Nichols was as American as apple pie.
So that is a stupid comment. It's a comment that comes from her hatred of this country. It's a comment that doesn't come from ignorance. She knows what she's doing here is lying. She does not like this country. She believes that it is systemically or institutionally flawed, and she will put out garbage like this with the intent of dividing her audience. If she had an actual audience of note, think about all the damage that would be done as a result of silly, disgusting, despicable comments like that. She is a horrible person. She's not just ignorant. She's not just wrong. She's a bad person. Because I think comments like that, the intent is to create division. That is the intent. It's not merely political either. It is political, but not just political. This is someone who benefits from any kind of racial tension. There are a whole bunch of folks on the left who benefit from racial tension. They love it. I don't know how many of them actually believe in some of the garbage that they say. Joy Reid doesn't believe that this happens all the time, that it's as American as apple pie. A statement she doesn't even truly understand. But she wants you to think that it happens all the time because then she can reach her political goal, which is to abolish policing as we know it. That is what her intent is. And she benefits financially from it. She benefits politically from it. Anytime someone buys into that garbage. Now, there are ways to talk about this in a political sense that isn't just disgustingly exploitative. Do you think Senator Chuck Schumer was able to do that?
This should have just been a routine traffic stop. It never, never should have ended the way it did in unnecessary violence and bloodshed.
We did not know that. I think most people actually saw the video and said, yeah, no, I get what happened. This is normal, right? It's Joy Reid audience members.
The repetitiveness of unjust murders like Tyre Nichols is a stain on America.
Oh, is it?
The five police officers who betrayed their oath to serve and protect should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
So a stain on America. How is this a stain on America? Seriously, how is this a stain on America? I think it's a stain on those five individual cops. You can maybe argue it's a stain on the Memphis PD if this is a result of poor training, but how exactly is this a stain on America? Again, it's not, unless you believe that America is systemically racist or white supremacist, even though these officers happen to be black. This is not a stain on America because America had nothing to do with this. Five individuals had something to do with this. When the 9/11 terrorist attacks happened, was that a stain on Muslims? Was it a stain on Islam? I'd love Chuck Schumer to answer that question. I would say it's not. I would say it's a stain on terrorists. It was a stain on the men who committed the acts of cowardice. When a teacher sleeps with a student, is that a stain on teaching or is that a stain on that one individual? I would love to know the answer to that. You can pick the industry. Is it a stain on teaching? And if it's a stain on teaching, or even if it's not, is it a stain on America when a teacher sleeps with a student? It's part of the American education system. one that has institutionalized protections for bad teachers. No, you would never say that because Chuck Schumer doesn't believe it, what he said about cops, but knows he can fundraise off of. He fundraises off of his support for teachers, not off of his support for law enforcement. Now, sometimes that changes when they're able to politically benefit, when they're able to pretend that a Republican is responsible for something bad that happened to cops or whatever it happens to be. These people are shameless. These people are absolutely shameless. And they're never going to stop until they're out of office or out of a job. Joy Reid is going to continue to spread her vicious vile because she is paid to do that. And until she stops getting paid to do that, she will continue to do what she thinks leads to a successful show. How she defines successful show, I don't know because we've seen the ratings. Chuck Schumer and other Democrats, Cori Bush, AOC, Hakeem Jeffries, they're going to continue to espouse their hate because they have been rewarded with seats in the Congress, some in the House, some in the Senate. They've been rewarded. So, of course, they're going to continue the exact same kind of rhetoric that they know, they must know that it's driving people apart and they don't care because it keeps them in power. That's the only reason, for example, in the last interview, Cindy Jacobson's law or bill isn't being considered. People know that it's the right thing to do, but they won't do it because they don't benefit from it politically. Our system is filled with people who can do a lot of good, who can create a lot of change, inspire a lot of unity, but it's also filled with rotten to their core folks, soulless ghouls, who seem to want to create division. Same thing on TV. Or in the media in general, you've got some folks who are brilliant at what they do. They unite people. They inspire people. And then you have Joy Reid. Then you have Lawrence O'Donnell. Then you have, you know, the MSNBC lineup. One more hour of the show coming up after this.